Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for the second episode of Survivor, David versus Goliath. My name is Mike Bloom, here to bring you everything about this fantastic second episode, including all the know-it-all shenanigans in New York that surrounded it. First, let me welcome in my tried-and-true co-host of the B&B, the Mason to my Dixon, Leona Boris. Leona, how are you?
I'm great, although I do feel like this season we've been podcasting like a bunch of Davids. So I think we really need to step it up, and I think this is the perfect episode to do it.
Hopefully, considering the Davids did not do too well. I don't know if we're the designated weak links, but this guy is definitely not a weak link when it comes to podcasting. Our guest for the week, you know him from a slew of post-show recaps podcasts, most recently the fantastic Better Call Saul coverage he's doing with Rob Cesternino. Let me give him a virtual fist bump so it's not completely visual. Antonio Mazzaro, welcome back to the B&B.
Hi, thanks, Mike. Thanks, Leona. I can be the Dixon to your Mason. If I'm not sure that I want to embrace that, but I guess I do live in Kentucky like Nick. So here we are.
Yeah, as a, I don't know if you want to speak on behalf of all Kentuckians, but is the Mason Dixon line like, I mean, this is probably speaking to my geographic foibles, but I didn't necessarily realize that the Mason Dixon line also ran over the border of Kentucky.
It's it's not great. I mean, it's the Maryland Pennsylvania line, but it 100% has an impact around here. You certainly hear about it, or it's part of it. I mean, I believe, and I don't want to be wrong about this, but I believe the Dixon part of the Mason-Dixon line is where Dixie, the term for the South in general, comes from. And there's definitely a debate where I live in northern Kentucky about where that line actually begins and ends. If you go probably about 15 minutes outside of the Cincinnati area where I live, the southern accents pick up and out of nowhere, I guess because that's the TV or radio they listened to when they were growing up. But it's instant. You can almost feel yourself crossing the line on the exits on the interstate.
Interesting.
I'm just looking forward to Survivor Season 53, the Civil War edition.
Red versus blue.
Yeah, right, exactly. not the Halo-inspired cast. No,
this maybe. Just throw it in there. Throw a couple of e-gamers in there just to, right. just to do a catch-all of everyone who likes the idea of red versus blue.
Red, see, totally not racist. It's fine.
Or blue versus gray. I guess our modern Civil War is red versus blue, but we don't need to talk about that.
Well, let's talk about another division that might have occurred on our screens this week with Survivor David versus Goliath. Antonio, through two episodes of David versus Goliath, how are you feeling about the season so far?
I really like the way the story is being presented. I was on the B&B last year, famously kvetching or talking about how all of the edit based talk and all of the groupthink around that and people highlighting specific confessionals was driving me crazy listening. So I just took myself away. I dropped out and stopped listening to podcasts that were talking about things like that or spoiling perhaps things down the line. I feel like maybe the editors of Survivor or the producers of Survivor have heard some of those cries. Not mine. I would never presume that my opinion had any import or influence on that. But I think in general, the edit of the show in the stories of the characters, I thinking back to the first episode, feel like we got something from every single character, even if it was just a little bit. And I know a little bit about each person that's out there. And that's certainly different from seasons past. And I feel very good about where we are with that in this season. The tribe divides are pretty rough. The David tribe is a hot mess for sure. And it doesn't seem to be like there's a swap on the horizon. So they're going to maybe mire in that for a while, but I think they're going to build some strong bonds if they continue to go to tribal council. So I'm excited for this season and I'm definitely enjoying some of the characters and I'm looking forward to talking about it more today.
Well, first of all, don't discount your opinion. The NSA is always listening and forwarding your opinions to Survivor production.
I can imagine the NSA being one of those like old school telephone operators with like the big board with a bunch of connecting cables. Like, all right, they're talking about Survivor. I got to direct this call to Mark Burnett.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And of course, they're with that accent wearing a newsboy cap for some reason.
Good telephone operator voice, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Very on point. Yeah, who's on the party line? This is good. Give me Parkway 6500, please.
Well, Liana, I know that we, you know, sung praises about the premiere last week. It's always hard to sort of follow that up. Second episodes tend to not necessarily be the best draws, or they sort of maybe set the tone as to the way the rest of the season goes. How did this land for you personally?
Well, I think it was nice to start to really see where the alliances are going to fall. I mean, obviously, whenever you have a tribe that has to go to tribal council, those alliances get tested and we get to see where people, you know, true, like where who they really want to play with in the sand or otherwise. Although, you know, it will be nice eventually to see if Goliath ever go to tribal council, although I doubt they will. So, you know, it would be nice to see their divisions. But in terms of the David's tribe, definitely it was nice to see more of everybody. I mean, again, I think I kind of co-sign what Antonio was saying of the David's really being put through a lot and building for a strong bond. So it's going to be interesting. You know, they might be the ones that survive when we get to the merge and the Goliaths start to eat each other up.
Yeah, I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I think 5-6 weeks from now, we are going to take a look at the game and say the Goliaths in this moment should have thrown a challenge to get Natalie out. That's just the feeling I have. And not to spoil Survivor South Africa, but that's something, a very similar mentality that Shannon Gates and I had sort of imported that obviously played out in the end game, and I'll keep it vague like that. But, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily within the Goliaths mentality to throw the challenge. I don't know. To your point, Antonio, I try not to read the edit too much, but I remember when I was sitting there and there was a nice little Statler and Waldorf and other Muppet, I guess, triage of myself, Josh, and Steven sitting together during the know-it-alls, which was fun. But I just felt like we were getting from this episode all the Natalie stuff made me feel like, okay, there's not enough intrigue or, you know, other options being provided here to make me feel like Goliath was going to tribal council. And it ended up being true. But I will say the second half of the episode, which primarily just features, you know, the entire David tribe flipping on itself, I thought was extremely well done, even though, you know, Rob does make a point on the cast podcast that we didn't hear too much from like your Davies and your Bees and your Jessicas and your Carls in terms of the strategy as to why they're going to vote for Lyrsa. We really did see every step of a counter movement coming together, which was really cool. We got to see that Elizabeth and Lyrsa alliance really almost immediately bear fruit. We saw the alliance that was made earlier on in the episode and last episode with Christian's, you know, various one-on-one pairings start to bear fruit as well. So I'm starting to really enjoy how, you know, the things that have been brought up in episode one really segue into episode two, because that doesn't sometimes happen on Survivor.
The Nick and Elizabeth one, too, the quote unquote thoroughbreds, that seemed maybe like that was important as well, even though we didn't necessarily see the evidence of that or the direct evidence of it in episode two. We saw the proof in the pudding with the vote. So, yeah, Nick was out there making alliances with everybody. But the two that we really see him talking to directly are two of the main people that are involved in this flip. So that's great. And maybe we didn't see the Lyrsa stuff because, Mike, I think you're forgetting. Jess said people just don't want to talk about it. Like they won't talk about it. This is it. People have made their minds up. They don't really want to talk game. That's that. So maybe just go play in the sand, Gabby. Just do that.
Oh my gosh. That conversation on the log or wherever B, Gabby, and Jessica were all sitting was so uncomfortable. Like, I totally get where Gabby was coming from.
Right.
I thought they were targeting me and I wasn't even playing. I was like, why are they being so cagey? Why won't they talk about the vote? Oh my God, they're targeting me. So it was so poorly handled. Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've seen early game Survivor meltdowns, if you will. The first time somebody really has to face a tribal council and they're worried it's going to be them because they don't feel in the loop. I think in this case, Gabby had every reason to be worried that it was her because, yeah, you're right, Leona. That conversation was so brutal.
Yeah.
And it really informed the way she countered her interactions the rest of the episode. Like, that prompted, I think, her very panicked discussion with Christian of like, okay, are you going to play with me? You're not going to play with Jessica, right? And then there's just one moment when Elizabeth goes to her with the plan and Gabby goes, oh, no, it's me, right? That's what you're telling me right now. Like, essentially, Elizabeth was trying to like build her up before completely breaking her down. So I was a little intrigued to see, you know, hyper paranoid Gabby. You know, she advertised herself as a Kleenex commercial to Josh in First One Out, and we have seen a bit of that emotional fruit over the past couple of episodes, but it was interesting to see that other side of her. Here's hoping that, you know, now that she is past the first vote, she's able to calm down a bit Even though, you know, she was able to make the flip, and that might put her a bit more front and center than maybe she wants to be.
Well, and I think
don't know. Yeah, go ahead, Liana.
Well, I was just thinking psychologically. I mean, that's still the sort of the first one out, you know, because Pat really was medevaced. And so in terms of who is voted out first, you know, so there's sort of the anxiety that goes along with the first, you know, the, I guess technically second one out, but I think first one voted out.
Yeah, Nick, I think, talked about that at some point, or somebody did. Like, this is the time, Christian, maybe. Like, this is the time where you really get, it's Christian, you really get to test these alliances. Like, you really see where the people have been talking a lot the last few days, but now you're going to see where the lines lie. And so there is that bit of anxiety for everyone, I think. But I do wonder if B and Jess had handled that better with Gabby, if this vote result would have been the same way, or would Gabby have just been pulled in by the move that was already in motion with Elizabeth and Lyrsa and them deciding, just realizing in the middle of a conversation, maybe we should vote Jess out. Would that momentum have carried Gabby into that alliance anyway? Was this already in motion, or was it the bad handling by B and Jess that really led to this? And it's hard. I think the episode presents it as though it is the bad handling that is part of the reason why Gabby gets in that position. But I feel like that move was already in motion. If she's truly aligned with Christian, and if they wanted the move to work and they approached Christian about it, I'm not sure it wouldn't have happened anyway. But it seemed like their poor handling was a huge reason why this happened. And I guess this is what David Bloomberg and Jess do. So I will leave that to the side.
No, I mean, I do agree. And, you know, from my exit interview with Jessica, she alluded to the fact that apparently Gabby and B were very tight. So I do wonder, to your point, Antonio, I do think a lot of credit should be given to the fact that this conversation was completely bungled and stoked the fires of her paranoia. But if this didn't happen, you know, I feel like she would have been in a very interesting position, and maybe she would have been presented as the swing rather than Christian and Nick in the episode, because she would essentially be torn between her alliance with Christian and her alliance with B, which you never want to make those tough decisions early on. But it just shows how this David tribe is full of very active players. I do not attribute any other adjectives to it in terms of good or bad, because I think that we have yet to really see. But I think this is really what happens when you cast people who are actively excited to play the game. It might not be the most optimal style of gameplay, but damn, it makes for exciting television.
It's a hot mess. It's a hot mess tribe. The theme is a bit of a hot mess to me. I understand where we're going with Fiji, and we have to keep continuing to come up with these creative things. And I've talked about themes in the past on podcasts, and I've never been super pro theme, really, but it's never bothered me as much as this one has. You've got Elizabeth talking about what Davids are like as though she's ever contemplated that in her life, like 5 minutes into the game. So it bothers me. Also, this is going to just make me look like the biggest loser in the world. I don't like pluralizing, like the Goliaths have a huge advantage. Why can't we just say Goliath has a huge advantage? It bothers me that we refer to every one of these people as Goliaths, in that there was only one Goliath and only one David. So why can't we just call it the Goliath tribe and the David tribe and be done with it? Like, the Goliaths are getting out into the water. Just say Goliath is getting out into the water. It just bothers me. I'm getting triggered every time I hear one of the tribe names. This is my problem. This is my problem.
I would appreciate David is out in the water. I'm already having trouble, even though it is pluralized, with just picturing all the David Wrights, like a whole tribe of David Wrights is still the only thing I picture. So I think that would really help.
It would also be a bit of a problem, though, considering that there is someone in the game named Davey. I know he doesn't want to go by David, but it could be a very who's on first moan of Jeff saying, David, out in the water. And Davey's like, no, Jeff, I'm back here with the puzzle.
You forgot, like, you're just, come on, Jeff, wipe your eyes off. This is bad.
Yeah, put your glasses on. All right, well,
get the sand out of your dimples.
So speaking of Jessica, let's get into our preseason predictions as to how Miss Pete would do. Liana, what did you and AI have to say about Jessica preseason?
Oh my.
Okay, so obviously I was inspired by AI to write this prediction, but her placement, oh, that was all me. So I had Jessica in the finale.
Ooh.
And yeah. So here's what I wrote. Jessica was a beacon of positivity around camp the entire game, which is what kept her around when the weather was less than ideal. She stuck with the dominant alliance and was afraid to make a move because she sensed how to survive, because with survivor family, blessed experience B. While this strategy got her to the final three, the jury just didn't respect Jessica's game as they underestimated her, a toothbrush blonde. In her final jury speech, she claimed, "I'd grown positive, and I believe thinking of my game causes sneezes." Sadly, her speech was all for naught, and Jessica got zero votes in the final three. Also, this doesn't make any sense now, but I promise it will later. Her closest ally was Dan, and her worst enemy was also Dan.
Wow.
Broken Dang. Promises.
I know. Good sign and bad sign. I mean, Liana, you literally took us to church there between be blessed, be, and also saying bless you in response to her saying that thinking about your game will make you sneeze.
No, Mike, that was BBI, I think. I don't think that was BE. Is this Survivor B&B, by the way? Is it like, have you changed the spelling this year?
Yeah, it's well, B and B.
Well, we consulted with BS to like how we should change the name. And she's like, I mean, a lot of companies are doing different things. I can't really tell you anything right now. And so we just sort of went off on our own.
Well, we didn't have the proper technique. So
yeah, it's all really about technique, not about the size of the
advantage. Yeah, she gave us a big pep talk about like, guys, it doesn't matter if the other podcasts are bigger than you, you know, like where I come from, even though we divide specifically by the size that we are, it doesn't matter what size you are. So poor toothbrush blonde, unfortunately, did not make the finale. So by my own whims, I went with Jessica going pre-jury. I said the parents on her tribe will look to her as a temporary adopted daughter. I did say she would get swap screwed, which was ironically enough after she said, you know, she loved Twists. And I said she'll post the most photos from the pre-jury trip on social media, which has yet to be seen. I said her closest ally would be Gabby and her worst enemy would be Lyrsa.
Oh.
Hmm. So unfortunately, no Dan involvement there. Antonio, we put things in your court here. Who do you think had the more accurate Jessica prediction?
I don't know, man. On one side, you've got a toothbrush blonde, so this is really tough to match. But yeah, come on, Mike. Like, this is, I really am sorry, Liana, that AI did not take it this week. But Mike, the daughter, like, that's there. I feel like that was in there. Like, she reminds me of my daughter. I feel like that was in the episode. The Lyrsa stuff is in the episode. The pre-jury stuff is in the episode. I got to go with Mike on this one. I'm sorry.
No, that's totally fair. Although this prediction game causes sneezes.
Yeah, I mean, you might be allergic to your predictions now by the end of this. I did actually get the chance to speak with Jessica on my exit interview as well. And to your point, Liana, about, you know, her sunny disposition being able to tide over even the worst weather, it sounds like that was something she was actually intending to do before the bad weather hit, where she said that, like, she just changed completely personality wise because of that, understandably so. But I think you were on the right track for the first like 12 hours of the game before it started raining.
Yeah, she looked miserable. She, and I know, you know, they were doing the sharing the stories on the David tribe, but still, like, she's crying, it's cold, it's wet. I was like, clearly this is wrong. But congrats, Mike, I'm proud of you.
I'm just waiting, much like Goliath, to like eventually fall to some sort of, I don't know what my slingshot's going to be from Liana / Skynet, but I'm just waiting. Pride cometh before a fall.
Yeah, I gotta go. I gotta go find Nick and get that slingshot that he hopefully found.
You gotta find Christian and turn that AI into like a death robot that will take Mike out at some point.
Boom! There we go.
Boston, you know, Dynamics.
There's no playing games without inherent risk involved to produce exhilaration. So bring it on.
Oh my God. Doesn't work as well when you do it, Mike. I'm sorry. Nerd.
No, I have to tilt my head at like 45 degrees and placidly look out as I'm talking. I think that's how you make like the perfect Christian conversation.
Is that a Christian? Are we talking about religion now? The names are all so very confusing. We have Blessed Be, we have Christian Conversation. This is a Davy tribe. Like I'm off the rails right now.
Well, we'll put you back on the rails here. Antonio, as per usual, we each bring a question in for discussion here on the B&B week after week. What did you bring for us to mull over, whether it be about this episode or Survivor proper?
I want to talk about this season because the first episode, Jeff's big soliloquy at the beginning of the season, when he's convincing
it's pronounced Shaquila, Antonio.
Shaquilla, this whole Shaquilla that Jeff delivers at the beginning of the season, when he's convincing all these players that they fit into some archetype that they've never thought about for their whole lives, mm-hmm. and then they're going to talk about it for the next 15, 20 minutes in confessionals. He goes into this detailed thing about how the person who wins is going to be the person who seizes, finds the advantage. It's not about what the advantage is. It's about finding the advantage and using it. And the person who does that best will capitalize. And then we have, I thought, a pretty well-constructed challenge from the off that emphasized that underlying issue between David and Goliath, where David was stronger and Goliath was stronger and David had to be wily and use a slingshot or whatever, be smarter. And there was that great element of that. And then I'm just feeling like we kind of dropped the ball on that in this episode. There was the one moment where I think that if David gets through the thing first and they chop the rope, then Goliath, or if Goliath gets through first, they chop the rope, then David has to untie the knots. At some point that comes up, but I'm just wondering, did they drop the ball on this? Is there a way they could have altered some of the elements of this episode, especially the challenge, which I think ultimately we saw them level out at the puzzle, and then it seemed like David just gave up on the puzzle. So I'm wondering if there are ways to play. I don't think the theme has come into this season as much as I expected, other than one tribe seemingly being stronger than the other. And I'm wondering if there are ways that you guys think that they could have brought the theme into this episode more from a game design standpoint. And what are you looking for going forward from a game design standpoint that would underscore this theme a little bit more?
Go ahead, Mike. I would say that I think that we've seen this, you know, choice come up, to your point, in a lot of first challenges. I think back to Millennials versus Gen X, when Gen X took all those shortcuts in exchange for having, I think, more pieces of the puzzle to do at the end of the day. It is interesting that they bring this element of choice into like the opening challenges. You mentioned before how even the immunity challenge had, okay, you know, first through had to, you know, do one thing, and then the second tribe through had to do something a bit harder. But it's so interesting how, yeah, those don't really get brought up. You could say maybe like in the individual portion when we have the eat or play, that could involve a bit more strategy. I don't know if Kierhofer just wants to put forward more straightforward things out of the gate that don't require as much higher level thinking as the malnutrition begins. But I think you make a good point that this always seems to occur in introductory phases, but it's not something that necessarily gets brought up, especially in other pre-merge challenges.
Ghost Island, we're coming off Ghost Island, and I don't mean to jump on Yuliana, but we're coming off Ghost Island where that became, or like that was a theme that was present throughout the season, and we had all these ghosts and we had all these elements. So I just feel like the only elements of the theme this season that are carrying through to the episodes, and maybe that's why I'm down on it, are that one tribe is stronger than the other, and that's it. There's no element of what David can do to get back that seems to be presenting itself in the game with regard to strategy or any elements in the challenges or things like that.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to think. I mean, if you boil down sort of what, I don't know, maybe what our interpretation of the theme is, because although I originally thought it's do your parents love you, but in terms of game mechanics, you know, I don't know how that plays in. Like maybe like your parents, like the David parents are cheering from the sidelines, whereas the Goliaths don't get it. Yeah. I don't know.
Survivor daddy issues coming to CBS this fall.
Yes. That's after the Civil War themed season. So yeah, I mean, to your point, Antonio, about like, okay, the Davids, let's say they have less physical strength. Okay. That's inherent to the team. Teams, but then they get tools that sort of help them. So, you know, how is it that you design the challenges that sort of help the lack of physicality of the David tribe in terms of tools? So, you know, I don't know, I'm thinking for this past, this challenge, okay, maybe they don't have to hold the things that the puzzle was balanced on or something,
right?
Or, you know, one gets to stay in place, or, you know, two get to stay in place, they get to fix them or something. And that's sort of their
inherent
advantage.
Yeah, they have one rope instead of five or something. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I think that's valid. What about, it's just, what if they, I mean, maybe they should be getting to pick who sits out from the Goliath tribe. Like maybe there should be elements like that as well. Like I just feel like Jeff had that big Shaquilla, as Mike put it, at the beginning of the season about, it's about identifying the advantage and finding the advantage and using the advantage, and that's what's going to get you ahead in the game. But then the challenge comes and no advantage was presented, or no opportunity to work an advantage was presented. And I just feel like if we're going to be in Fiji and we're going to have these themes every season, then they should embrace the theme and they should put more work into designing elements within these challenges that speak to that and that level the playing field to a certain extent. That said, Even though David just got housed on the physical portion of this challenge, it seemed like they blew it by not doing the puzzle well, which is you would have thought if we're leveling it out that they would have had a shot, and they should have been able to do that puzzle in an hour. So I don't know. Watching the episode, did either of you get the idea or the sense that the reason the puzzle didn't get done in an hour was because people kept dropping it? When you look at David's puzzle at the end, they have like two pieces together, and they're not even right. So I don't think it's because they kept dropping it. I don't know what the hell happened there.
Well, my assumption was because they kept dropping it, and that's where, you know, people were saying, oh, it's the, you know, the Davids should be good at the puzzle. But in my mind, it was all about having to balance five different platforms at the same time and be able to keep them. Essentially, when you start putting the pieces, keeping them balanced is it's most important at the beginning, because once you sort of have the whole thing built, it's a little easier for one to sort of fall because the puzzle will like hold itself up. So like when you see the Goliath actually stepping backwards, Kara's is actually her platform is like dipping down, but the puzzle stays together because the two people on the other side are sort of holding it. And I think that the Davids really couldn't get over that hump of like getting those all those first pieces together. But yeah, it did seem like there were pieces that were out of place. So maybe there was something else going on, but my initial assumption was it all had to do with the physicality of having to hold up those balancing platforms.
I would compare it to that team building exercise where you and a group of people are supposed to count to 20 together, but only one person can say a number at a time. Where to Liana's point, like everyone is going to jump in on those first couple numbers and you're almost always going to start over. But once you get further along and you sort of build a rhythm, that's when the teamwork kicks in and everyone sort of has a sixth sense as to who's going to say what. So yeah, I think it was just a matter of like the Goliaths were able to get on the same page. I think the conditions also didn't help. It's a little crazy that they went from blistering cold wetness to a dry heat in the course of like 24 hours. And it seems like everyone was, I don't think we were getting like a, you know, Caleb Reynolds Salt and Pepper Memorial Award levels of passing out, but it seemed like the conditions might have impeded everyone's performances as well.
If you look in the background, one of the shots while David is doing the puzzle, you can see down on the beach that Elizabeth has her giant cowboy hat off and she's fanning someone who caught the vapors. I don't know who it is, but I would love to know who has suffered the heat issues there and Elizabeth is tending to. I can't really see who it is, but I'd love to know who that was.
So I think the bottom line, Antonio, essentially what you're suggesting is perhaps some sort of, I don't know, medallion of power.
Oh no.
Uh-oh. Bring it back. What have we created?
No, that can't be it. Yeah, no, that can't be it. David just always has it. That's really funny. And it couldn't be a slingshot either, because then invariably like Christian would fire the slingshot at the wrong team or something like that. Not to throw shade at anyone specific. But yeah, you can't really have a slingshot. So yeah, medallion of power. Oh God, no, it can't be. No, we can't do that.
Step away. All right, I got you connected to Mr. Bennett. He says, great idea. We'll bring it in episode 3.
I hope that Mike White's out there like, nope. Like, if he's the one who saved us from Redemption Island, maybe he can save us from our Medallion of Power reboot.
I thought you were going somewhere else with his last name, and I did not want to make that joke. So I'm glad you were making a different joke.
I wonder if he does have pull, where it just says, drop your buffs. Mike goes, nope, hold on. Do you think that's such a good idea? And Jeff's like, you know what? You're right. Okay, let's next the swap. Let's get to your next challenge.
Jeff, I just texted Sia, our mutual friend, and she says no. I feel like we're in this cycle. We're in the Fijian cycle now, and that's fine. I think a lot of people have been turned off by the themes that emerge because you're in the same location every season. I thought Ghost Island did a creative job of working with the theme and putting the people in Ghost Island. I think they can improve on what they did on Ghost Island, but I think in general, I was pleased with the idea of Ghost Island, and it didn't always work, but I think that it was a good groundwork for a theme that played into the course of the season. This one is pretty trash in my opinion. And I feel like it's just a repeat. You make the joke about the Medallion of Power, but we've seen seasons before where people have an extreme advantage or where people are in control. And I just wish that the David versus Goliath and the idea that David could be creative or wily, or that there was some element of an, I think they did it well with the first challenge. I think they dropped the ball in this challenge. I think Liana makes a great point about maybe you do something where you can acquire something that makes your ropes easier to control or something to that effect. Maybe you can do something early in the challenge, make a choice that gets you a smaller puzzle or that you had to solve a puzzle to get another. There are just elements they could have worked into this challenge. It seemed like a straightforward physical puzzle with a challenge at the end, not one I thought that highlighted the ability of David's to be different than Goliath's. So here we are.
All right. Well, we watched the David not drop the ball as they drop their puzzle pieces. But let's move on here to our first game of the podcast. And this is something that I have lent from Rob Cesternino. This is a game he brought up last year, I believe, when a previous guest Rourke was on the podcast. CBS All Access. Gotta love the platform. Gotta love all the stuff they put out there. Their caption game might have been written by a David as compared to a Goliath, in that sometimes they mismanage or mishear words, and we see them delightfully on our screen as we watch the episodes. Here's how this game is going to work. We're going to go back and forth. For each of you, I am going to read two possible misspelled captions from a sentence that occurred in the past two episodes of David versus Goliath. One of them actually appeared on CBS All Access. One of them I made up. It's going to be your job to figure out which is the fake caption and which is the real caption. Liana, how are you thinking your chances are before we go into this?
Oh, man, I don't know. CBS All Access, closed captioning like a bunch of Davids, which is, I think, now my favorite phrase to use. So watch me overuse it and run it into the ground. But I am excited, and I have no idea how this will go, but let's play.
Antonio, you're someone who notoriously loves to rewatch episodes of television in order to break them down. Have you ever rewatched Survivor with the closed captioning on?
I have in some cases to hear what things were said, but that doesn't always work, because you're right. The captions are failing. That said, I feel like Liana knows robots better than I do, and knows these automated machines. Liana's AI friendship here may serve her well. We'll see.
That's right. I'm excited for the blessed experience. B causes sneezes. Close captioning.
Absolutely. So we'll see who ends up smiling like a toothbrush blonde by the end of this. All right,
oh,
Antonio,
God.
Let's start with you. So again, I'm going to give you two possible captions. One of them is true. One of them is false. And we'll start with a pretty, you know, elementary one here. So this is from Jeff's previously on Survivor for episode 2. Obviously, the sentence is supposed to be at the Goliath tribe, Dan fell for Kara, but the All Access team mismangled Dan's name. So you have to guess which one of them is the correct caption here. A, at the Goliath tribe, Ban fell for Kara. Or at the Goliath tribe, Gran fell for Kara.
Oh, boy. I think there are interesting connections in both possibilities here. I don't want to really delve too deeply into them, lest I reveal some issues about my own psyche. Let's just say I'm going to go with Ban. I'm going to go with Ban because we have a B on the season. I think maybe these people just don't understand, like, that not everyone has a name like B, and that maybe somebody's name is just Dan. So I'm going with Ban.
That is correct. Ban is the correct one. I really wish it was Gran. And it made me also think about the fact that if you had a grandmother saying the things that Dan says on Survivor, it becomes a bit more palatable.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, grandma's like finding with the two hottest girls on the island.
Yeah,
that would
exactly.
Be a
like
she
said, like, I found an idol with the two most beautiful women on the island. Like, doesn't that sound nicer than it coming out of, you know, a father of two?
I don't know. Does it? Does it, Mike?
Mike, was that the retired phone operator?
Yeah.
Did the phone operator retire and now that she's a grandma?
Back in the day, Eisenhower, he was a looker, much like Kara.
This has gone off the rails. I love it.
I want to see Gran play next time. All right, let's go to Liana here. So this is going back to Nick's confessional about his relationship with Christian, comparing themselves to another Survivor pairing. And it was really fun to watch Stephen Fishback in person jump up and throw his arms in the air in exaltation when his name got mentioned, specifically the part that he was a genius. But here are the two possible captions. A, we're like JT and Sheehan, or B, we're like JP and Stephen.
Oh, man, it's probably JP and Steven. But I just really want it to be Sheehan. Yeah, OK, I'm going to go with Sheehan. I don't care.
It's a more fun answer, but unfortunately, it was JP and Steven.
That's so sad. Although I do like this concept of it being sort of a closed captioning Rorschach test.
It's speaking to your psyche, right? Yeah. It's a Rorschach test.
Yeah.
I also like this idea of JT's closest ally being a chicken.
Yeah. Oh, Sheehan.
Or it's like a combination of Sheehan and Steven with a chicken. I'm just imagining some sort of mashup there. But just, it also provides a nice image of Steven working with JP Hilsebeck, which I don't know how crazy Steven would have been driven by JP's mannerisms
and things like that.
he's just so good.
I can't believe it. I have to call my grand.
Really funny.
When you take
that would have been really funny.
Take your pants off. that's still my favorite JP moment.
All right,
it's going to be hard to top that one, really.
Antonio, you are up 1-0. Mike White went a bit into his resume in the first episode. This is Mike White going over his resume. A, I wrote Stool of Ra and Nacho Libre, or B, I wrote School of Rock and Nacho Leak Ray.
Either Stool or Leak Ray. I'm in trouble either way.
Yeah. Stool of Ra, like the sun god, or Nacho Leak Ray, like some sort of cheese powered death device.
Let's go with the stool boom from the powder to the pool room, Mike. Let's just go with the stools.
Unfortunately, you are not coming up like Blaine. It is Nacho Leak Ray is the correct caption.
Oh, no.
Wait, really?
Yes, Nacho Leak Ray. Actually, the aforementioned Rourke sent a couple of these to me after our podcast last week. And yes, Mike Wright talked about how much he loved writing Nacho Leak Ray.
If you have Nacho Leak Ray, you should see a doctor, I think, maybe.
Or Nacho Lyrica, as Davey wrote on his vote for Lyrsa.
Yeah, shout out to Keith Dixon for the tweet that that Davey voted out fibromyalgia. I laughed really hard at that tweet.
You're a David. You have fibromyalgia. You need Lyrica. All right, Liana, let's go back to you here. Natalie is done with the booger teeth of the Goliath tribe.
Great way to start.
Which, by the way, Natalie, like boogers, Allison did not say boogers in my teeth. Natalia said, do I have boogers in my nose and do I have something in my teeth? Don't connect the two, because Natalia's facial system is not that odd. Initially, Natalie said, you know, everything here is childish and high school like, so no, I'm not doing that. Here are the two options that All Access provided. A, everything here is childish and Holly like, so no, I'm not doing that. Or B, everything here is childish and cry stool like, so I'm not doing that.
More stools?
Right. Okay, well, I guess I'll try to follow the last question. I'll go with A and avoid the stools.
Much like Jeremy getting washed away by the waves, avoiding the stools is nice. Childish and Holly like is the correct answer.
So wait, you had two fake stool answers? What is going on
here? I think this is the test for Mike.
I mean, I had to do two fake stool answers. It's only appropriate, right?
Because that's the trick. I'm used to writing casuals corners and like one's real, one's not. But nice try, Mike.
I also
you could have chosen any other word than stool, though. Like, okay, whatever. This is fine. Everything's fine.
I do like Holly like, because I don't know how you get that from high school, but it feels like Holly. So maybe the All Access people have that out against a girl named Holly. Holly Hoffman, maybe.
I don't know. You should get your Nacho Leak Ray checked, Mike.
I will. Dr. Allison, please help me. There's boogers in my
Nacho Leak
Ray.
Mike is the one who would check that, actually.
Oh, God, no. I don't want to be washed over by knock-knock jokes like Dr. Allison with a tidal wave. All right, let's go to number 5 here. Going back to you, Antonio. We're tied up 1-1. So when Davey is searching for the idol, he mentions, he pulls a woo and says, you know, my eyes are always surveying the premises ninja style. Here are your two possible captions.
Oh, dear.
A, My Rise are always surviving the premise says ninja style. So P-R-E-M-E-S space S-E-Z is how they did premises. B, my guys are always surveying the perm ISIS ninja style.
Oh my God.
This is worse than my predictions.
No stool options, Mike?
What no, unfortunately C, not. No, yes. See, okay. My stool is always stooling the stool ninja stool.
Somebody make that into a drop. I'm going to go with, God, is it possible that ISIS made it into CBS All Access? Like, this is bad. I'm going to go with option A. I'm going to avoid ISIS at all costs.
That is a good motion of action, and that is correct. Yes, the My Rise are always surveying the premise says was real, and my guys are always surveying the perm ISIS is incorrect.
That sounds like something President Bush said at some point.
I don't know. You lost me about halfway through. I was like, I don't. I mean, technically, I think I know the words that you are saying, but not in the particular order in which they are assembled.
All right. Well, Liana, let's go to you here. You have to get this right to tie it up. Otherwise, Antonio wins. Episode one brought up the, I think Rourke calls this the idle gap last episode between Angelina and I think Allison. We're talking the actual quote was not enough women find idols, but your differentiation is not enough women find dreidels or not enough women find angles.
Okay, so Judaism or math is what we're going with.
Yes, the biggest discrepancy we exist in our society, math or Judaism.
That should be a new game on the B&B, by the way. I'm just submitting that for future B&B episodes. Judaism or math?
Now, cosine, is that a Hebrew word or is it a math function?
Oh my God. Okay, let's see. All right, I'm going to go with math. I'm going to go with angle.
It's understandably for Liana, and that is correct. Not enough women find angles, which I think is also pretty applicable to the game of Survivor, too.
Support women in STEM.
All right, so you are tied, and I don't have a tiebreaker. So I think the true winner is CBS All Access for providing us with these fantastic captions that have made this game. Truly, you have given us a stool to stand on for this podcast.
The true winner are the listeners of the B&B who just got a STEM joke. That's fantastic.
What's the highest level of humor here between playing?
Yeah, really. We're finding angles. Yeah,
Judaism or math as our segments. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, to sort of take it back to the episode, I guess, and not the closed captioning of the episode. I was actually super curious about how is it as a Survivor player? How should you approach being told you're getting voted out because you're the weakest? Now, we saw Lyrsa say, oh, I'm not the weakest. You know, you sort of fight against that moniker. And then Natalie, although she kind of took it a different way of being the biggest threat, I guess, she was selling herself as I am the weakest and you can take me and drag me to the end. So I was just trying to think of if you're being voted out because you're the weakest, like how are you supposed to convince your tribe otherwise? Or like how do you go about it? How do you sell yourself? How do you stay when that's the reason why they're voting you out?
I've seen in the past, you just race somebody down the beach, right? Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah, yeah.
They can run backwards or forwards, but you have to race them and show that you're strong. It's a good question. The debate never came up because Rob, I thought, did a great job mentioning this on Know It Alls. Like, and I guess this is your curiosity. We can call this Be Curious. The fact is that that B was saying, I'm basing it on challenge performance, and B blew the challenge. Like, it's like, oh, really? You're going to base this on challenge performance? I don't know. But I do think that if you could put that on blast, that would have given, I think if Lyrsa doesn't feel like she's got to move, right? If she feels like I've got no allies, I'm being called the weakest, then the goal is really to put that on display in the middle of the tribe and say, you say I'm the weakest. Here's the evidence from the first two challenges that show I'm not the weakest. I did the first challenge. I was the first one across the rope ladder. I could have fallen in the water then and we would have lost. I didn't. You saw me like almost vertical or horizontal, just flying through that
rope
ladder.
She was almost vertical too, considering that she wasn't exactly upright.
Yeah, either way, right? So I think you put that on blast and you just say, here is the evidence that shows I'm not the weakest. And if you're targeting someone else as being weaker than you, then I think you can put that on display as well. I mean, you have to go to war on that front. I don't know that you can do anything else if you're cornered like that. I think the solution is to show your strength in another way, which is what Lyrsa did. She showed that if they were challenging her weakness in the physical game, maybe they have a valid point. It looked like she gave up on the puzzle, but her strength in the social game, it was a huge advantage to her here because it helped her rally votes. It helped her change what the perception was about who was stronger or weaker or needed to go home. And I think that she showed her strength in a different way. And that's what, maybe she's a David. Maybe that's what she needed to do. She slingshotted her way through that vote. So I think there are multiple ways to do it depending on what your situation is. She had options because she had a good ally and because she had people that were willing to make a move. Other players might not find themselves in the same situation and might have to behave differently. I am interested in the Natalie strategy, though, because Natalie's like, look, you're going to vote the 57-year-old. I'm damn near 60 years old. You're going to vote me out. Like, you're going to, why don't you just drag me to the end? And my response to that is like, why do you want to stay in the game if you don't think you can win? If you're out here selling that you're definitely going to lose the game anyway, then why do you want to stick around? Like, what are you sticking around for if you don't think you can win? I find that her pitch was a lot. I think that was an empty pitch. I think she wants to stay in the game because she knows she's not the weakest and she thinks she can win. So I think her pitch that she should be kept in the game because she can't win is pretty weak to me. And I don't see that as a reason to keep her around in any way. I don't think selling yourself as a goat works for me, because I think that if she, considering her position in her tribe and considering that she's older and she's not fitting with everyone else, the deeper she makes it into the game, the more dangerous she's going to be. I think that's a really poor sell on her part, to sell herself as weak. That is, it just doesn't speak to anything that she's experienced in her life, in any of her skills that put her on the Goliath tribe. So I didn't buy her pitch at all.
I can understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, really coming forward, providing point by point evidence as to the challenges. But could there also be a case of like the lady doth protest too much of, you know, sometimes if you raise too much of a stink, you draw the target even further on yourself, and maybe it almost gets turned around on you and saying like, oh, she can actually, you know, she can defend herself pretty well. Maybe that's another reason to get rid of her. I mean, it's a really tough situation because it also depends on the people that you're around. Could you make some sort of like loner deal? Could you say like, hey, if you keep me and I biff, put me on the puzzle the next challenge, and if I screw it up for everyone, vote me out. Do you think making as bold of a claim as that could actually lead to you getting kept over some other random person?
What kind of bargain is that, Liana? Like, is that some kind of like, that speaks to like the idea that you might be able to just make a deal down the road for what's happening now. But I don't know that I'm sure we've ever seen something like that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, certainly, something that's, you know, that's so concrete, Mike, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, if I don't win this puzzle, or, you know, do this puzzle well enough to win the challenge, like, then you can vote me out. Like, I'm trying to think of any example that we've seen that before. I think maybe what I thought of, Mike, when you said lone wolf deal is, you know, sort of, I guess, what Lyrsa said, where it's like, I can be a tool for you. So if Natalie is on the outs, and I think Jeremy tried to pull her in, you know, John Hennigan tried to pull her in, and obviously she was resistant to that. But I think maybe that's where you sort of you gain your social foothold, is through these like one-on-one side deals with people where it's like, look, if you keep me, you know, I'll work with you. I don't know if maybe that's the right approach, but obviously that requires some self-awareness, which it's up for debate whether Natalie has or does not have.
I don't know what you're talking about. I am very self-aware. You're not self-aware. Everyone says you're not self-aware. No one says that. Wait, what? Yeah, this is very difficult for her. That said, I'm definitely Team Natalie. Like, I'm 100% Team Natalie. It wasn't a good look for her, but I'm with you, Mike. Like, the fact that it wasn't a good look for her and they didn't go to tribal council makes me feel like there might be a shot for her going forward, because we're getting a lot of evidence of the problem she's having, but we're also getting evidence, and I think Dom Abate pointed this out, we're getting evidence of things that she's doing. She's taking Mike aside and saying, hey, people are targeting you, like, you're standing out. She pulls Kara aside and says, hey, like, the showman's thing, people aren't liking that. John Hennigan wants to work with her. So I think she's got options, and I don't think her best sell is, I'm weak. I'm terrible. I'll never win this game. You want to take me along. It's an interesting situation though, because to some respects that plays to the egos of the David tribe and saying, you're all bulls. You're all strong. You're all great competitors. Don't you want somebody like me around who isn't like that and who's clearly an outlier and who's different? You can use me. That's the tool strategy. But I think they're different people. Like I'm not sure that Natalie is being targeted because she's perceived as the weakest. I think she's being targeted because she's being perceived as an outsider, as somebody who wasn't working on the shelter. I think she's also being targeted just because Natalia is being portrayed a little bit as a mean girl who just doesn't like her, who's ranting about her, saying she seems like a stalker, like just saying negative things about the way she makes her feel. That doesn't have to do with weak so much as just it seems like that Natalia thinks that she is running the tribe and therefore she's going to target this person who's perceived as an outsider. That seems to be more to why she's being targeted. Lyrsa was being targeted because she was the weakest. Like that was the stated reason. And I think her way of proving that she wasn't was the best way she could have done it, which is prove she has strength in other ways. And that's what she says at Tribal Council. Ultimately, it makes Jess look really bad when Jess steps up and says, maybe you shouldn't start playing when you get to Tribal. And it's like, little do you know that I showed my strength in the day before Tribal when I was working to get you voted out. So I think that's the best strategy for Lyrsa. But if you're on the outs and you have nobody and you have no social out to show your strength in that way, I do think that's when you have nothing to lose. If you're already the target and you're already going to go home, who cares if you put a bigger target on your back at that point? So it's all about what your best alternative is. And I think for Lyrsa, she had a better alternative. She used it. It worked out really well for her. We heard her say in the episode, I want to get Carl out. Like, I want to vote him out. But she didn't target him. She targeted somebody that she could work to get out, and that worked out really well for her. So I think she did a pretty good job, and I think she didn't have to resort to the strategy where she put it all on blast because she had other options. But if you don't have other options, I think that's where you maybe have to resort to just like blowing it up and seeing what happens.
So you can either say use me like a tool, or I'm a tool, keep me around.
Yeah, or I'm a stool, keep me around. Either
yeah,
way,
but yeah, stand up on me, it'll elevate you further in the game.
Yes.
The stool tool strategy. Next level. Evolution of the game.
Survivor 50, stools versus tools.
Right. You're the stools. People step on you to get above you. You're a tool. People use you. Listen, you're all pretty like washed up people at this point, but we're going to try to help you all here.
Disaster. Well, as long as it goes after rock, paper, scissors season, then I think we'll be okay. Well, so speaking of putting things on blast, I want to get to our next segment because this was a very bizarre idea that I had, but I want to do it anyway. So this was inspired by the quote that Jeremy had during the episode where he said, I don't know what's worse, the storm or Natalie. So in true B&B fashion, I was like, well, obviously we have to play the storm versus Natalie, where we have hurricanes and typhoons compete against Survivor contestants. But that didn't work because how do you compare gale force winds to like throwing rice in the fire? So instead, what I have prepared today is what we are calling some version of Survivor Mania, Survivor Royale. It is essentially going to be a tag team bracket to determine what team of Survivor players would cause the most chaos at camp. So what I've done is I paired up different Survivor players, and we will have a bracket, very quick bracket, to talk about which pairs would cause more chaos at camp. The criteria is, I suppose, it's up to us. We can define it however we want. This is the grand idea that I came up with.
Oh my God.
Yes. So, and in my mind, it's a wrestling match. So they're wrestling each other. It's like tag team wrestling. But I don't think their criteria is they're actually fighting. Anyway, so let's just get into this.
We picked the perfect guest though, because Antonio, you're such a big wrestling devotee that I feel like you're going to be like the de facto, you're going to be the Goliath on this game as to how things are going to go.
I'm the Vince McMahon of this B&B particular game. Yeah, I'll be all right.
Need your help with this nebulous, bizarre idea that I had. So, all right. So here, this is the teams that we have. So our first matchup.
I'm very nervous. I just want to say I'm very nervous about this. We're just going to see how this goes.
We'll just see how this goes. So I have four total teams. So we'll have, it's going to be, you know, two teams face off, and then the winners face off. And then they're going to fight, I don't know, the Hanses. I just couldn't put the Hanses in there as a team. They're just too chaotic. So
the Hanses, we're coming in with the assumption that the Hanses already have the belt.
Yes.
They are the Grandmaster champions of the world. Yeah. But, you know, Brandon, he got in a bit of trouble online, and so he was forced to give up the belt, and now there is a new bout to determine who will take the belt.
Exactly. So, all right. So this is our first matchup. So we have the tag team of Natalie from David's versus Goliath and Debbie versus Scott Pollard and Kyle Jason. So the Natalie Debbie team, they're called Team Sass, aka Team Self-Aware Sisters. And then Scott and Jason are the Great Balls of Bounty. Because that was the idea I came up with at midnight last night.
Did just write these names for you?
Yeah, maybe. I was like, just throw them up in the captions. It'll be fine. So that is the first matchup. And then just to give you an idea of where we're going, our next set of teams, it's going to be Abby Maria and Coach as the Brazilian Dragons versus Jatia and Cass as the Bad Luck Brains. So first, let's start with Natalie and Debbie versus Scott and Jason. So does anyone have any thoughts they'd like to start with?
Well, my first thought is I'm not nervous anymore. I was really thinking that you were going to pair a survivor and a famous storm versus another survivor and another famous storm.
That got
storm.
Depressing real quick.
No yeah. doubt. That's why I was worried, Liana. Come on. Like, I didn't want to talk about Hurricane Andrew right. and Debbie teaming yeah, up exactly. against, you know, Hurricane Hugo and Natalie. So here we are. I'm glad that this worked out better because, yeah, I don't really want to hear anything like that. This is much better. I was really worried. Like, there was a lot of places I did. There were a lot of third rails in that analysis that I didn't want to touch. So this is much better. I don't want to be sidetracked. Can you run down we have Debbie and Natalie versus versus Kyle
and
Jason
Scott Pollard
and Scott yep. Pollard. I saw Scott Pollard recently at a Indiana Pacers basketball game, and he was a superstar. Like, people were coming up to him all game, getting their pictures taken with him. And I thought there are no Survivor fans here because he would be getting booed. As far as chaos around camp, Mike, what are you thinking here? I feel like the Debbie is the biggest chaos agent in this whole foursome.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Debbie would probably be the most full of rage in the course of this. I think that I'm also thinking about like entrances. I think that Debbie will walk a balance beam into the arena. I think that that's something that she really wants to show off. I don't know what Natalie would do. I think Natalie would just sort of like sit around and observe her, and maybe criticize her afterwards. But the thing that Kyle and Scott have above those two is quite literally height. Kyle does not need a top rope. He can just stand on Scott's shoulders. He's a stool in that regard. So I feel like, especially when it comes to, you know, grabbing idols away from people and throwing things onto the fire, neither one of those two women have done that yet, even though apparently didn't Debbie like poop in the middle of camp? So this might be a very odd matchup.
I think you're forgetting one thing too about Debbie, which is that she is very professional wrestler-like in both her ring attire with Ooh, the yeah. tiger bathing suit and the idea that she's worked so many gimmicks over the course of her career. She's been like a scientist gimmick, and she's been like a waitress
gimmick.
The water
tester.
Yeah, she's had all these different gimmicks. So she's probably worked in a lot of different territories, been to Mexico, been all across the U.S. She's had a little bit of problems maybe with the authorities. So she has the background of a professional wrestler, I think. And of course, Scott Pollard as an ex-athlete, you could also point to him and say he's got the background of a professional wrestler. There are a lot of athletes who become professional wrestlers after they serve their time in their various fields. The height, the size, that doesn't really matter in professional wrestling. They are creative
ways
to work around
that. It's a very bee-like attitude, Antonio.
Yeah, there. It's all about the technique, Mike. It's all about the technique in that sport. So I feel like the Pollard and Sarge team would be the heels in this, and I think that that also matters because you're looking at how these tournaments ultimately play out. I feel like Debbie is the X factor here. I feel like Debbie knows the ring. She knows how to work this, and I feel like she's the difference maker. I think that team is the one that advances.
Yeah, I would co-sign that also. I think Scott and Jason for me are also a little one note in terms of what they might bring, whereas you never know what you're going to get from Debbie. And Natalie, you know, we've only seen a little bit from her. Like, who knows what other levels of chaos she could bring?
She's going to drop the Natalie napalm all over the crowd. And Scott and Jason are going to try to put out the fire with the buckets of water that Natalie's napalm caused.
Yes, exactly. We don't know what Natalie napalm is. And I think that also adding with the...
It's a finishing move is what
exactly
it is.
Right. Add that with the Debbie X factor. And I agree. I think they're the ones that win this bout.
Yeah, I could perceive it like a hot tag to Natalie, and she just steps over the top rope and she gets in and drops a leg on somebody, and that's the end of it. So I'm on this team. This is good. I like
this. All right, Mike, you're all right with that. You're being you're outvoted anyway, so you don't really have a case. Yeah, I don't know exactly why I asked you.
I've been sufficiently pinned, so I'm ready to move on to the next
stool,
Mike.
Yeah, sit on your stool. All right. So our next matchup, Abby Maria and Coach versus Jatia and Cass. Mike, do you have any thoughts?
This is going to be... Someone's going to end up in the hospital here with this bout, because you have Cass with her newly announced pacemaker. You have Abby Maria, who you could very easily take out at the knees. And you have Coach, who you can just like give a swift kick to the back and he'll start spasming and he'll hit the floor with a nice goo. So Jatia might be like the strongest among them. That being said, Jatia and Cass were able to win at least, or not win, but at least survive one challenge together as part of the Brain Tribe. So provided that Jatia does not screw anything up, I might have to put the preference on them. Plus, that means we get like an all-female Final Four, which would be a lot of fun.
The fact that you've got the Dragon Slayer versus the Pacemaker, those are really good wrestling names. Like, that works really well. So that's the first part of it. I think the issue in this match is that Coach is probably playing to the crowd too much.
Yes,
and gets distracted. He's, you know, he's vamping along the ring, like he's showing off. Maybe he's in his character, the conductor. Like, maybe that's what he's bringing to this one, and he's not actually Coach. He's the conductor, and he's like conducting the audience like a symphony, and then he gets snuck up on by Jatia, and that's the end of that. And Chaos Cass is I like the pacemaker moniker. She could also be working the attorney angle, like with the Brainiac. She could bring that to the table. She also really would probably be very invested in taking Coach down. It just seems like she would be the kind of person to throw a low blow into the mix. Maybe that's what's happening. Coach is distracted by the crowd. Cass slides into the ring, low blows him, hits him below the waist, and that's the end of that. So I like this idea as well. Coach is wide the loops for sure. Well, I don't know where Abby fits into this.
I think that what happens is while Coach is like preening to the crowd, Abby says like, okay, like you effed with me, I'm gonna flip over to the other side, and it's actually 3-on-1. They all beat up on Coach, and then they very easily double team Abby after that.
Yeah, that seems accurate. Yeah.
Or I was thinking Abby Maria is like off in the crowd trying to find her bracelet. Like she's like not even in the ring at all. So that could also happen. I also like this idea of Jatia when she comes out, part of her entrance is like throwing rice into the crowd or something like that.
Yeah, she could be like the bride, and she'll like throw rice out in her wedding dress.
Yeah, I think Jatia and Cass definitely stay focused, whereas Abby Maria and Coach are just a hot mess for like a whole myriad of reasons.
Yeah, they're just so mad. Abby could be the one fighting with the ref, and the ref is distracted when Cass throws the low blow. She could be. I like the 3-on-1, the double. That works really well for me. They're just either way, that team is going down. I love the throwing rice with the entrance. See, that's brilliant.
And then Abby Maria breaks a bottle of acai vodka over Coach's head as her finishing move.
That's perfect. Okay, so now we have the true matchup: Natalie and Debbie versus Jatia and Cass. Who do we think is going to take home the championship belt from the Hanses?
This is so confusing. I don't know. So the winner of this team just gets the belt,
or do they take on the Hanses? I don't know. My dumbass Hans Alliance team, or something like that, or maybe who?
The Hanses are like the Dudley Boys to me. That's like there's a lot of them. They just keep coming out of the woodwork. Some of them are small. Some of them are big. Like I don't know. So you could just throw two Hanses in this lineup. I think you could take them on. It could be Sean. It could be Brandon. It could be Ro. There's just a lot of options with the Hanses. So I don't know. But the matchup at hand, the final four, this is tough for me. Any thoughts on this, either of you two?
I think that Debbie, I know the first it's going to happen when Debbie attempts to do chin-ups on the bar to sort of show off, and then Cass just sort of like takes her out right there. And then she'll still be standing, but I feel like that's going to be the first major hit. And I do have an idea of how the Hanses are going to get involved that we can talk about in a little bit once we figure out who's the main winner from the Sisters of Sass versus the Bad Luck Brains.
Yeah, the self-aware sisters versus the Bad Luck Brains. Just super creative ideas. I think, you know, the thing that I appreciate about Cass is that her chaos is very directed and focused. And I think that that's really what you need to pull out a win here. Like, I'm just thinking the chaos of Debbie and Natalie, you know, and also Natalie hasn't been around all that long on the Survivor chaos wrestling circuit. So I don't know how in tune she'll be with her teammate. And I think Jatia is just a force to be reckoned with. Although Debbie does bring a certain je ne sais quoi.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if Jatia is a force to be reckoned with. I think that if you put any real challenge in front of her, she's not going to do too well. Debbie could like wheel out one of that fish puzzle, and Jatia would just spend the entirety of the match concentrating on that and not be able to fill it out.
Just to get distracted.
I think the missing element here for me, at least on some level, is that Natalie and Debbie are a classic tag team pairing. Like you have this kind of quiet, just dominant beast monster heel who will come in, and the mouthy front person is the person who's out front of the team talking trash, going nuts. And then you bring in, they're like the Enzo and Cass of this. And it's a bad, since there is a Cass on the other side, it's a bad comparison. And also Enzo and Cass are not great people. So I don't want to compare them one to one, but in terms of the tag team pairing where you've got a littler, crazy person and a larger person who you don't want to mess with, it's a classic tag team pairing, and I feel like I've seen that pairing work out so successfully so many times that it's hard for me to see them losing. The question that I have is, Jatia is famous for her I Love Nerds take. Does that play into this at all, where she is embracing any element of any of this? Does that come into play? Because we have Debbie's so smart, everyone knows it, like she'll tell you how smart she is, and Natalie is so successful. I wonder if Jatia is in any way swayed, and do we have any kind of elements where there's a turn happening there?
Just enamored by the two of them. Well, I'm trying to think, because, you know, if we're going to take down the Hanses, what if we somehow get some team swap up happening and we try to send our best competitors to take on the Hanses? I feel like that could also be a twist that happens sort of in this final battle.
Oh, that, it's your bracket, so you tell me. I think that would work really well if you're realigning the teams. I mean, what was the situation for Jatia? Was it a brains brawn beauty situation? Mm-hmm. So maybe we could have 3-2 or 3-3 in the finals as well. Ooh, like there are those opportunities.
I like that. So I think that Debbie is enamored by the I Heart Nerds concept, and she says goodbye to Natalie. She says, Natalie, someone's in the locker room talking about Holly-like high school things. And so Natalie sort of runs off to dispel that. And so three of them against the Hanses. And here's what happens. So Russell enters the ring to, you know, uproarious boos, but he's able to sufficiently start taking down. He's got like idols throwing them around people's necks, pulling them in and dropping them down. And it's just a bloodbath out there until Brandon Hanse enters the ring wearing this champion's belt. And what happens is Debbie and Cass approach him and they say, hey, Brandon, you know what? I think that the man upstairs, you know, he's looking down upon you. He would really appreciate if you gave away the belt. Nothing's going to happen to you. You just give the belt to us and everything should be okay. And so Brandon, much like he was duped in South Pacific, does the exact same thing. He gives away the belt. And as a result, he is, in essence, voted out of the championship. And it turns out that our three-way winners are Cass, Jatia, and Debbie.
I love it. And of course, you know, everybody else is yelling from the stands. So you've got Coach out there yelling. The cast of Australian Survivor from this season is out there yelling. I think this is just really entertaining. I love this ending.
And it would be very fitting, I think, for Brandon Hance to do that. That is this in a very wrestling standpoint where there's a psychological game that's played and he loses out to the mind games and he's swayed in that way. And maybe he could even join the family, like he could leave the Hance family and take on a new gimmick and join the people on the other side. Like this is there's plenty of opportunities in the wrestling world. If you were to continue this story where Brandon could take on a new personality and he could come out buttoned down and wearing like the attire of like a Mormon elder or something and show up in the ring like I'm ready to preach the gospel. And then you've just there's so many wrestling characters. The Hance family really, I mean, they book themselves in many respects. So it's definitely there. I like this for sure.
I can't wait for a flipped off season two when actually the flipping involves flipping people in the wrestling ring instead of flipping houses.
You could put Debbie on flipped off as well. She's a big fan.
Or who is it? That was it Elizabeth who flipped off the cameras in that preseason picture? Exactly. Yeah, you throw her on there too. All right. Well, thank you for engaging me in my very bizarre idea that took on a mind
I'm so
of its
thankful
own.
It wasn't actual storms. That makes me feel
You're
so
welcome.
Much better that I didn't have to make jokes about Hurricane Sandy. This is good.
Yeah. Well, and I have simulated much weirder instances on Survivor seasons before, so this was just par for the course for me.
Exactly.
Yeah, we didn't have any inanimate objects fighting, so that's good.
Not yet. Although, so I did think this is super tangential, but when Davey found the lizard that everybody thought he was going to eat and then he like put it in his bag, when I was thinking of this idea, this wrestling idea, I just had Davey popped into my head and his thing was throwing lizards. So he'd just be like, pocket lizard. And he would just throw a lizard at somebody. And that was also an idea that went nowhere. But I thought I'd mention it because why not?
Yeah, it went somewhere. It went right here. I love that you said, like, you know, not to get too tangential, as though we're really on point here.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't lost the plot.
Not to get too far away from our simulated WrestleMania with the craziest survivors ever. I do like Davey the Lizard Wizard, where
here
he's just like, octopus, lizard, just like catching things and he throws them on people to distract them.
Yeah, in following in the footsteps of Jake the Snake Roberts, this works really well.
Oh, Davey has like the little lizard on his shoulder.
Aww, I love it.
So it's
the lizard. We call him the Lizard King, which would I think John Morrison would then say, or John Hennigan would say, that's gimmick infringement, bro. Like, that's my thing.
And then we bring him in. It's perfect. Maybe we'll do another one in the future where John Hennigan wrestles the trio of Cass, Jatia, and Debbie to see who truly reigns supreme here. But speaking of Davey, my question involves Davey's fantastic confessional about him finding the idol. He said, you know, I never saw an idol before, but when I took a whiff, it smells like an idol, which begs the question, what do you guys think an idol smells like? And this was discussed a bit at the panel at Know-It-Alls as to whether or not it smells like leather. Antonio, what are you thinking? What are your olfactory senses telling you about the smell of an idol?
I think they reuse these things, so they have to smell gross AF. Like they have to just smell like the and they go in people's pants all the time.
Oh yeah,
and they go underground and like the sea foam, like beach, like just washed up nastiness that they gets buried under the ground there. I just think they smell like fish and inner thigh. Like it's not good. Like this is
some people say those smell the same.
Oh no! I did set that up. I do regret it, but here we are. So
it's in my pants, or however.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think an idol just smells like straight up dookie, just because it's been in so many different places. Even just like sitting in the woods, like it was in this wet sack.
Does an idol sit in the woods, Mike?
Yeah, exactly. If an idol, idols do sit in the woods, and I think that just the way it probably did not smell too well, no matter what it was made of. Liana, do you have any thoughts about it?
We already heard her thoughts.
My thoughts were so wholesome in comparison. I was like, it smells like the craft store because they just bought all the beads. Like, it smells like Michael's and slightly like scented candles. That was my thought. But man, I mean, I can see where you're coming from, I guess, because it's been sitting in the in a wet sack. Thanks, Mike, for that visual. Yeah. For a while.
Smells like damp burlap. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, this is
yeah, exactly. Much like the sack that you buy in 4-packs last week from Liana's eBay listing. Well, the other thing as well is maybe there's something that producers can do in future seasons where if they want idols to be more regularly found, should they like give the idols a scent so that people can follow them? You know, like if you smell pumpkin spice in the middle of Fiji and you follow that scent, there's going to be an idol.
Oh, my God. More white tongue. Girls will find it. That's how you get more.
Yes, that's how you said it. Thankfully, you said
that's
it.
That's how you get more women to find idols. Make them smell like pumpkin spice.
So glad that you made that joke, Liana, because I wanted to make it and didn't feel like I could.
It's not.
Yeah, that is exactly right. I think that I think we'd have the idol found in post haste if you made it smell like a PSL or something to that effect. No, what is that? Cinnamon rolls? You're just walking off into the jungle and then, oh no, it's an idol. People might be so hungry that they might eat the idol though. That's a problem. So we had to run into that. You got to make it smell like something people, is that movie theater popcorn? Like what's going on here? Like, I don't think you want to make it smell like something appetizing because they're so hungry out there. It could just happen. I think you'd have to, I don't know what you could make it smell like that wouldn't want to make people eat. All of these scented candles are some variation of something that you might want to eat. So I don't know.
This I don't know if it smells
old books. Does that smell like old books? Here we are.
Exactly. But some people might be like, yeah, they say, oh man, I'm just disappointed because it's so freaking boring out here. I could read at least a book. Now I just have an idol. What good is that? Yeah.
See, information is the true advantage, obviously, books over idols. I think though, if you don't want women to find it, you make it smell like Axe body spray. Boom.
Yeah, Dan would find it again, though. That's the problem. Like, you just run into this issue where the same person finds it. So, I don't know. Maybe what they do is instead of the comfort items, you list your favorite smell before the season, and they have various things that are your favorite smell. Like, I don't know what Mike White's favorite smell would be. Maybe it would
Money.
Be inside
not,
of his
nacho
hat.
Licre.
Nacho
what
licre.
Smells like nacho licre? I mean, I think that, I mean, Dan would obviously be brought in by Axe body spray, but what about Gran? Would it be like Werther's original?
Mothballs?
You really want Gran to play this game?
I want Gran versus Dan to happen.
This smells like those orange circus peanut candies I love so much. That what? Everyone in the world hates. Yeah, I don't know. This is save this game for a future week, but you could decide what each person's individual smell was. We had Angela from Big Brother this summer, who was very famous for her sense of smell and identifying the smells of the various people. Maybe we have to identify in the future what the various smells of all the various competitors are. There's probably too many people left on the board at this point. And I guess maybe by the merge, they're all just going to smell terrible. But I wonder what they came into the game smelling like.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm surprised Josh didn't ask that in Foo. Like, okay, what? Here's a picture of a person. What do they smell like? Because maybe that can determine a lot about what you think about a person.
Oh, talk about a Rorschach test.
Right, all the senses involved. I don't think we want to go there.
No, so, we don't.
So we will promptly plug our noises maybe for a future date to address more smells of Survivor. But at least we've sort of functioned on or circled around what an idol smells like. And it doesn't sound like it smells very good. So good on the players for being able to hunt them out and keep those nasty smelling things on their person for such a long portion of time. Let's move on here to our final segment of each and every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. Question this week, in honor of and tying with our Survivor Mania segment, what is your John Hennigan like nickname? And I think we sort of opened this up to be like either for yourself or for another Survivor. We got a slew of answers, a lot of names. So let's see if we can go through these. Let's start with great friend of the podcast, the Melissa Bot. Melissa Bot said, I think Johnny Chen Moonves would be a good nickname for wrestler John. And they also said Mayo of Slamtown would be good as well, though at Nick Majorano might disagree. I think my Mayo of Slamtown would be fun.
Yeah, you could go the whole condiment route, you know, like I think really ketchup, mustard, relish all need their time to shine in Slamtown.
And I think that, I mean, I think, though, Debbie might get distracted from her possible bout win by the Mayo of Slamtown. So, you know, I used to be a model as well.
He's like a Greek god.
Adonis.
The feta of Slamtown.
All right, let's go to Parker Schibler, who says, some nicknames of mine include garlic bread, R-A-K man, which stands for ropes, axes, knots man, Parker, I don't know if you revealed your weapons of choice here.
Yeah, it's like BTK, RAK, like, it's just, I think there's, that's a serial killer, I'm
and
pretty
park
sure.
Park job. No. Sounds like a park job.
Sounds like something, yeah, Barry park, Zuckerporn yeah. is into, yeah.
He's a park job killer, he struck with his RAKs again.
He left his signature at the scene, garlic bread.
That's gotta call the mayor of Slamtown. Something's been afoot here.
Well, that's what Parker's idol would smell like, garlic bread, obviously.
Oh yep. Man,
that's a pretty good one. I would definitely eat that idol.
Yeah, that'd go hand in hand with the Olive Garden merge feast. I think that would be, right. It'd be the hardest idol to buy because it smells like garlic bread. Moving on to Edward Morris, one quick one, the illustrious Edmo. I love this. Very very Haley from Big Brother like adjective to apply to somebody as a wrestling name.
I would buy the pop figure of the illustrious
Edmo. Edmo, you're looking very illustrious this evening.
All right, next up, Trent C, great commenter on the RHAP BNB thread on the RoughHousesWebsite.com. Captain Commenter, Cheap Seat Concierge, Peanut Gallery President, hopefully not Circus Peanut Gallery. We got the Opinionator, TC Khaleesi, Thunderbuns, Trent Trivia, Tenacious TC, Trenter the Tormentor, Mr. Twister, Tornado Trent, T Rent Syndrome, and Tinkerbell from Hell.
You really got to get focused, Trent. Oh, that's too many.
What? John Hennigan had like 20.
That's true, I guess.
Trent's been working in Mexico. Anna,
they have on. Masks there.
What is T-Ren syndrome? Is that like alluding to something specific?
I don't know. That sounds like something that the closed captioning people might have. We should look into it.
Yeah, I want to go back to illustrious. Does that just mean like an illustration? Like, is that what that word means? I mean, I've heard the word. I've just never really thought that it's just like the word illustration. So does Edmo just look like a drawing? Is
yes,
that
he
what
looks
we're
like
saying?
He's like a flat Stanley. He's just a 2D cutout of a person. No,
it's like distinguished, right?
Illustrious says a well-known.
Yeah, it does, but it's so similar to illustration that I just, maybe they only used to draw illustrations of distinguished people at some point, and that's why the words are related.
Yeah, that's why all those paintings of English kings, exactly. Illustrious, well-known, respected, and admired for past achievements, according to dictionary.com.
And like an illustration.
And like, like an illustration. I forgot there was something scrawled in pen here on the side of dictionary.com.
We've updated that. Sorry. Yeah.
Look forward to our next segment where we talk about word origins. Hooray.
Sorry.
B&B etymology coming soon to your podcast feed.
The Edmoology. Yeah, this is good.
Grace Leader said, the saving grace. Everybody calls me that, period. Everybody.
That's ominous. Really? They should team up with Parker.
Why don't they call the Amazing Grace? Like, isn't that better than the Saving Grace?
I'd rather have a Saving Grace.
Nobody. Oh, man. Amazing Grace would be a better wrestling name, I feel like. But that's just me.
Unless she like always comes in as like the person at the very last minute to save the match.
All the run-ins. Yeah, she does run-ins every time. So that might work.
All right. Next up, Michelle says her wrestling name's Death Knell Michelle, the Maroon Monsoon, ew, and Magnanimous Spider, parentheses, IDK, no. Got this one from a wrestling name generator.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say Antonio is crushing that one.
No, yeah, I'm stepping on it. So I like the Maroon Monsoon because that fits in with all the chaos and the storms, and she can jump right in on the tag teams, not the actual storms, thank God, tag teams. So the Maroon Monsoon fits right in there.
Let's go to great listener in the podcast, Brendan Fitzpatrick. I'll be one of those wrestlers who always changes their moniker. Binging Brendan, Business Brendan, Bumbling Brendan, Bully Brendan, and perhaps my favorite, Bongo Brendan.
Bongo Brendan.
He's working like a drum circle gimmick where he's like got dreadlocks and hanging out in the park playing hacky sack. I like this.
Teams up with the bucket drummers from the subway. I think you've got something there.
Team bucket.
There we go.
Bucket
the real
B&B.
The better B&B.
Not better.
And finally, Will from America had to put this in here. Grover Brains and Braun Johnson.
Yes. Grover Johnson.
So, Liana, you got to watch the premiere of The Neighborhood this past week. The illustrious Neighborhood. Yeah. What was it like?
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to think of how to best describe it. I think I was confused most of the time because it was sort of this like, so Cedric the Entertainer was clearly racist towards white people, assuming that white people either are normal racist or they love black people so much that they're also racist. And it was very unclear how I was supposed to take the show. The sons of Cedric the Entertainer's character were a little bit more nuanced. I feel like to really dive into it, we need a whole podcast about it, or no one should ever podcast about it ever. But needless to say,
so all or right, nothing is essentially what
I was. I was intrigued. I might actually watch the follow up the next week's episode.
I mean, the shows only get better, right? Like this, the whatever you watched was what they used to sell the show. So
right.
Hopefully they've got more legs behind this thing. This, you just watched the premise.
Okay, let's here's what I will say. The entire episode, I felt like I was watching the Grover Johnson promo. What's funny about it? Am I supposed to laugh? Like all the jokes were kind of like that, where it was like, I'm sorry, wait, is this funny? The laugh track is telling me to laugh. So that was sort of my impression. So we'll see if it, if it changes and we move past the Grover Johnson promo.
I like you saying that it was a promo for Grover Johnson because it makes me feel like he would cut a wrestling promo. Yeah. Maybe I'm just have wrestling on the brain. Like, I'm going to take you in the backyard with Cedric the Entertainer.
I love it.
Let's not take that promo any further. I don't want to hear any threats from this little kid to his new neighbors because it's really, talk about a third rail, for God's sake. Let's not do this. Well, yeah, that's interesting, Grover Johnson.
Antonio, I'll cut to you here. What are your John Hennigan-like wrestling nicknames?
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm working like a lawyer gimmick. I did win. I once won the title in law school best oralist. So like I think the Missouralist might work, something to that effect. Yeah. Two Z's, one R somewhere in there. The Italian Stallion, two Z's, one R. I don't know. I don't really, I've not come up with wrestling nicknames. Yeah, you just have to like figure your way into working. The best wrestling gimmicks are the ones that are the closest to the person at their core. So like John Cena's wrestling gimmick is John Cena. Like that's who he is, right? So he came out when he first came in. He was this guy from the Boston area who was the white rapper. Like that's the gimmick he was working. And that still is part of the overall John Cena, but he's not out there really rapping anymore. He's just John Cena. The Rock was The Rock. Like that's who he is. Like it's his legitimate name. He wasn't really portraying a character. It was like an amped up version of himself. So my wrestling guy is probably, it's probably the Missouralist, because I would just come out and talk the whole time and everyone would be sick of me.
Just sort of like lull your people into sleep. Yeah, I like that. So
my finisher is the ASMR.
I had a really hard time coming up with nicknames for myself. So the first one that popped into my head was because I do the Saturday morning updates for Big Brother, the Saturday Morning Delight, which is super creative. The PhD of the B&B, the Galentine of 69, another idea that I had.
Ooh, I like that one.
I don't know what that means. I was also really intrigued by the George Bushy of Tushy, and I really tried to come up with one based on like, I don't know, Theresa May or Angela Merkel, and then try to like work in something, but that never came to fruition. So if anybody has ideas on that, please let me know.
No. The Theresa May of Saturday.
Oh, beautiful. See, exactly. This is why I need help with these. All right, so Theresa May of Saturday.
You're going to Brexit from the ring soon.
That is definitely my gimmick, which totally makes sense.
Yep, it's just like I said earlier, just an amplified version
you know
of who
me.
You really are.
Let's go.
The Theresa May of Saturday.
For you, EU.
So I've been fortunate in that I feel like I've had some monikers like gifted upon me in the past few years of podcasting. I have Mixmaster Mike in the pocket. I have MC Blue Mizzard. I had from this podcast a mop like Meat Boy, which I don't know what that would mean. Maybe I'll like brandish a mop and throw meat in people's faces like Davey did with lizards. But I also went the presidential angle, like Liana was trying to do. And I went with the Millard Fillmore of Man Whores.
Boy. That's great.
All right. So I'm assuming we're all going to adopt that as we start the RHAP Wrestling League coming up very soon. The question of the week for next week, in honor of Gabby and Christian's fantastic misunderstanding over their conversation at the tail end of last episode, which Survivor player would you want to play in the sand with? Now, look, it can be whatever you want, okay? Open door here. It can be drawing in the sand. It could be building sandcastles. Whatever you want, but you have one player to pick out of the past 600 plus that you want to play in the sand with. So go crazy, people.
This was such a good exchange. Like, when I was rewatching the episode, I was just reminded about how wonderful it is. Do you want to play with me? Oh, in the sand? Ugh. I don't know, it's iconic.
Oh, in the sand?
And he starts like, yeah, putting his finger down, like, oh yeah, let's do it.
So good.
Don't play in the sand with Rupert is all I can say. Like, that ends up with you being murdered in an underground shelter.
All right, take a shovel. I'll be like the RAK man. So you can give your answer in a bunch of different ways. You can always tweet it to us using hashtag RHAPBNB. You can post your response on robhasawebsite.com, as well as Rob Has Awesome Patrons group. We'll be going over these next week with our very special guest. Look, before the season started, we got this great announcement that Canadians are now able to apply to be on Survivor, which is awesome. And we've had Canadians on before, but we thought in honor of this occasion, we welcome on a new Canadian guest. I got to see her in person at Live Know It Alls this week. The great Kirsten McInnes will be here to join us and talk through episode 3 of Survivor David versus Goliath. It's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you send us your response to the question of the week that we can review with Kirsten. Antonio, thank you so much for coming on and subjecting yourself to the storm without necessarily needing to personally tackle it of this podcast. You were great fun as always. How can people follow you on social media and catch up with all the great stuff you're doing on PSR?
I'm at the Mazoralist. No, I'm at AC Mazzaro, 2Z's 1R on Twitter. We're going to wrap up Better Call Saul here this week, and then stay tuned. We'll see what's next.
Awesome. Liana, how can people follow you on social media and catch up with all of your neighborhood live tweeting that I'm assuming you're going to be doing over the next few weeks?
Obviously. You can follow me on social media. I am at Liana Boras, LianaBoras, tweeting about all things reality television and, of course, the iconic, the illustrious The Neighborhood.
Will you be doing drawings of The Neighborhood to show how illustrious it is?
That's right, which we all know is part of the definition of illustrious.
And you can always follow,
it's right there, it's like almost the same word, come on.
And you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Check out the exit press I do every week on parade.com. I got talked with Jessica this past week about her reaction to her immediate blindside. She gave us some behind the scenes info about, for example, how close she felt with Nick, as I mentioned before, B's bond with Gabby. Really interesting talk with Jessica. In terms of other writing, I am doing a slew of stuff this past week for THR.com. I have been lucky enough to attend New York Comic Con along with the great Josh Wigler and report on a bunch of panels. By the time this is over, I should have out my report on the Star Trek Discovery panel, as well as the Boy Meets World 25th anniversary and the Man in the High Castle as well, and a bunch of other random stuff in the meantime. So make sure I put everything out on my Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. Appreciate all the listens and reads you have for this fantastically crazy material that I get the pleasure of reporting on every week. So that's going to do it for this week's B&B. Thank you all so much for listening. If you have a suggestion for a game you want to submit, feel free to always tweet at us or email rhapbnb@gmail.com. We are always reading your suggestions and incorporating them into the show. A special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing this behind the scenes, Will from America for his theme song, I should use Grover Brainton Braun Johnson instead. It's his wrestling moniker. And Paul Aslison, our great head writer. We'll be back next week breaking it all down with Kirsten McInnes, episode 3 of Survivor David versus Goliath. Antonio, Liana, thank you both so much. Great work as per usual. Thank you all for listening, and we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB. You can't say for